Welcome to Candid Catholic Convos, a program brought to you by the Catholic Diocese of Harrisburg. Our mission is to humanize the Church and help you to grow in your faith, love, and understanding. I'm your host, Rachel Trochet, a cradle Catholic who's only human and struggled with faith on more than one occasion. Each week, you'll hear engaging, down-to-earth interviews and actionable strategies you can implement into your life with ease to help you grow closer to God. If you're ready to open your heart and step fully into the person God created you to be, then you're in the right place. Let's get started. Hello, hello, and welcome to another episode of Candid Catholic Convos. Did you know there are 15 prisons within the Diocese of Harrisburg? In fact, there are 12 county prisons, 2 state prisons, and 1 federal penitentiary filled with inmates. I've driven by the one in Camp Hill a few times growing up, but otherwise, I've never thought much about those behind the barbed wire. I never had any connection with any of them, other than I knew that I didn't ever want to be one of them. They deserve to be there, cut off from the world and forgotten because of their crimes, I thought. Years later, my husband and I were going through old photo albums, reminiscing about the experiences that now only exist in faded photographs or our memories. In one, he and his cousins are standing in front of a tropical backdrop, taped to a wall, with a man in a jumpsuit, all of them wearing uncomfortable smiles. I recognize the cousins, but not the man in the jumpsuit. "That's my uncle," he said. "We'd visit him in prison during the holidays, and they'd make us take these photos so you could pretend you weren't in prison." He told me about his uncle, who stole to feed his drug addiction, and who was incarcerated several times for it. He told me about when his uncle was released and had nowhere to go but my husband's house where he lived with his mom, about how his family was less than supportive of his release, and how the two of them connected during that time. He told me about how his uncle struggled to adjust to life outside of prison, how during his incarceration, 3 of his siblings passed away and his family was falling apart. He continued to feed his addiction, hoping to get back to the sense of normalcy that being behind bars gave him. But instead, he overdosed in the streets, and this photo was one of the last ones my husband had of him. See, to me, the inmates in prison were just that, inmates. But to my husband, this inmate was never just an inmate. He was his uncle. He was his friend. He was a person with a family. Did these inmates make poor decisions and in many cases cause great harm? Yes. Are they still loved beyond imagining by God? Also, yes. Visiting the imprisoned is one of the 7 corporal works of mercy given to us by Jesus in Matthew 25, verse 31 through 37. In this teaching, Jesus calls us to consider how we would treat others if they were him in disguise. I was in prison, and you visited me. Today we're chatting with Father Matthew Morelli, pastor at St. Anthony of Padua Parish and chaplain at Lancaster County Prison, to talk about this unique form of evangelization and the shared humanity we share with inmates as sinners. Father Morelli, thank you so much for joining me on Candid Catholic Convos. I'm really excited to chat with you today.
Happy to be here. Thanks for having me. And lovely to meet you.
Yeah, you as well. Thanks. So for those who maybe have not had the chance to meet you before, tell me a little bit about yourself. This is always usually the hardest question for people.
No, but we get it a lot at stuff like this anyways. So my name is Father Matthew Morelli. I'm from Hershey originally. I was ordained a priest in 2018. My first assignment was St. Joseph's in Hanover. And from there, I was assigned to St. Anthony of Padua in Lancaster. And I'm the pastor there now. So that's where I am now. So the briefest of introductions. I like to tell people too, I fit into Lancaster close enough being in Hershey. I already knew how to pronounce Lancaster correctly. So that was an advantage I had coming, the only advantage. But
hey, any advantage helps.
Yeah, certainly.
So in addition to your duties as pastor, I understand you also are involved in prison ministry. So talk to me a little bit about that.
Yeah. So maybe a bit like how exactly do we get involved in this stuff too? Because it's pretty random for us diocesan priests. We there are so many different things we could be doing. For me at St. Anthony's, the prison is a block away, so it's like pretty natural that I'm gonna be involved in that. So when we look at our ministries, it's really what's around us, what's in our territory, what are the needs, and even within like the deanery. So think there are nursing homes in my parish territory, and usually that's how it goes for parish. Each parish just ministers to the nursing homes in their territory. But then you think of like hospitals. It's much more of a regional thing. So the deanery parishes in a lot of cases will even hire a chaplain for the hospital. Sometimes it's a layperson to just coordinate the ministries at that location. A lot of times with hospitals, it's an actual priest. So for us in Lancaster, Father Deo and Father Dubois cover the hospitals in Lancaster for us, and all of the parishes support their ministry. For the prison, Lancaster County Prison, which is a kind of heavy lift. It's actually, I did look up, it's our the largest county prison in our diocese by population. So what we did there was we hired Deacon Jorge Nazario, and he goes to the prison many days a week, and checks in and coordinates the ministries there. So there's all sorts of things. There's Bible studies. Deacon Jorge himself will go to all the blocks and just meet the inmates, get to know them, invite them to stuff like Bible study. And I come in for masses and any requests for confessions. So when it was identified, okay, we need, this is sort of what we want to do in Lancaster County Prison. We'd like a priest to go in to sort of provide these sort of on-the-spot ministries, like with confessions and maybe some masses as well. So since we had a deanery meeting, and since it was like very open to, okay, any of us could take this on, who should? It's like, well, I'm right next door. I'd feel really guilty if I didn't raise my hand and do that. But it's been a blessing. It really has been a blessing as a ministry.
That's awesome. And I always wondered that, because I had interviewed a priest once who was the exorcist, and I was like, how do you get that job? Do you just wake up one day and like, I think I want to be an exorcist? So it's fascinating to hear that this was something that you had volunteered to take on as an, in addition to everything that you do as a pastor, because you have a lot of on your plate already, but being able to minister to these inmates must have its own challenges and rewards on top of everything that you already do.
It does. And sometimes, and I'd say almost with any of the ministries we do, especially when we're changing gears. I mean, having morning mass and going right into the prison for something, those are big gear shifts. Or consoling a family at a loss, and then heading to a baptism can be difficult things to navigate. How do I approach these situations differently? But they're also blessings to us too. It's like, okay, from going from maybe a situation where I need to put a lot in, and maybe it's a stressful situation for a lot of people, something like a loss or a family struggle, and it takes a lot of emotionally draining activity for us, to maybe go to something that's more celebratory, like a baptism, where people are happy to be there and to enjoy this this liturgy, this prayer together, can be very, very helpful, even though it's all very energy training. It has its own beautiful balance that way. And even the prison is like that. Even uplifting at a lot of times, and you can find support in prayer from the inmates. So there are many blessings that can come from a ministry like that.
Yeah, and that has to be interesting to witness, that those who are, a majority of those who are incarcerated are there for a reason, and just like them, we are all broken in our own way. So as a Catholic priest, obviously you're there to do mass and confessions, but do you cater just to the Catholic inmates, or is it more open for anyone? I mean, obviously for the specific sacraments it's mostly Catholic, but are you talking to those who may be atheist or maybe of a different belief, or is it just solely Catholics?
In a short answer, it's mostly non-Catholics or fallen away Catholics or not followed up Catholics. So maybe some this sort of, and it's really by circumstance. So maybe some background on just how like the operation of prisons would be helpful. And I've been at a couple of them before. So I would say mass in Adams County Prison as well. And while in seminary, I went with a couple other seminarians to a state prison in Maryland as well. So for some reason, I've been at a prison for most of my assignments. But so for volunteering at a prison can be very different for each one, very much up to warden how accessible things are. But all of them, you know, include some sort of entry training. A typical volunteer may, like at Lancaster County Prison, goes through a 4-hour training on an evening. And then they can basically just volunteer, go to the Bible study classes. They always have to be escorted by a staff level. But the Lancaster County Prison is very welcoming to volunteers, especially of faith. And our chaplain volunteers are always coordinated through a prison chaplaincy program, which, as far as I've experienced, is always operated as a charity by local churches of all denominations, and they coordinate all denominations and religions that offer chaplaincy services to the prison. And then the Catholic chaplaincy, it's now called Cross. So they sponsor volunteers to come in and say, okay, this is so-and-so's pastor. He says she's a Catholic in good standing and can come and volunteer at the prison under our ministry, and comes and does that. As the priest chaplain at Lancaster County Prison, I trained as a staff level volunteer. So me and Deacon Jorge have gone through most of the same training that the prison guards went through. And we went through it with the prison guards as well. They have multiple classes a year, think like graduating classes of guards and staff each year. So we trained with them. Some pretty neat stuff. You hear a lot of stories of the prison through that. Obviously, the guards that are teaching have a lot of wisdom behind that. And it's a great place where the culture of the prison is taught as well. Again, Lancaster County Prison has a very good good culture of human dignity. The guards are very hospitable. They're always kind to me, very helpful, because it is a prison. I never really know exactly where I'm going. It's hard to figure out sometimes, but they're always helpful in pointing me in the right direction. So went through a lot of that training stuff. It's very mandatory around PREA, Prison Rape Prevention Act, and Elimination Act, and stuff against like inmate manipulation, and teach you, okay, this is how someone might try to take advantage of your good nature, and you don't want that to happen. You know, pretty good, you know, just keep boundaries. And then a lot of other interesting training stuff, like I learned how all the restraints work, how to put on handcuffs and take them up, different ways of escorting people and stuff like that. I learned a lot of stuff that I am never going to use.
That was going to be my next question, is how often do you need to put any of this into practice?
That's the thing. Maybe some, who knows what will happen.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of the stuff that I was involved in learning was that, because the point of this course was, okay, now I, as the priest chaplain, can go anywhere in the prison unescorted. I go around by myself. I have to have a walkie-talkie. But I can go into the blocks. I can go to people's cells. You know, I could be anywhere and see anything. So that makes me think, okay, that's a good reason for seeing how the prison operates, like as far as like restraining somebody in a chair. It can look like a very violent process. You know, someone who doesn't know what they're looking at may think, oh, you know, look at what they're doing to poor so-and-so. But, you know, now me knowing what the processes are, I'm like, no, they have a very strict process of what situation requires this, how they treat the inmate as they are restraining them, what safety measures there are, you know, to make sure that they're well taken care of, that they're not hurting themselves, that they're not using too much force, that they're not injuring somebody, they only use pressure points. So to be exposed to just the level of care that the inmates are being given, and to be able to support them in that if need be. Because in some of those situations, they may even ask a chaplain to negotiate or to talk to somebody, you know, to minister to them. So it's good knowledge to have and something good to be exposed to. Again, at Lancaster County Prison seems like a good integration of all the community supports that can be given to the inmates. So it's a neat education, that's for sure.
Definitely something you don't learn in school.
No. It's lots of, like most things, I think, with diocesan priesthood, very much on the job learning. And some by mistake. I've made plenty of mistakes at the prison, but they're so merciful. It's like, I see why I shouldn't do that. And how, you know, there's all these procedures and stuff. So it can be a little difficult to remember.
Yeah.
But it's a good place for that. So if it's like back to actual ministry in the prison, so the sort of ministry opportunities we provide really centered around like Bible studies, and any inmate is welcome to sign up for those things. So it's an interesting combination, you know, and anybody can sign up. So those who sign up are in some way willing to come to that class. And it's obviously not just Catholics, because anybody can come to that. When I go in to say Mass, I do that over top of one of those Bible study times. So instead of the whole time being that Bible study, I'm also there for Mass. So it's a really interesting, very much missionary opportunity to say the Mass for these folks. A lot of the times, the majority of them are not Catholic. I had a Mass last week where none of them received communion because they weren't prepared for that. Now, some people may have been baptized Catholic, but never continued the faith. Get that a lot from folks out of South America. When I do go to say Mass, it very much is an evangelization effort. It can be very repetitive. It starts out with, okay, this is the Mass. What is the Eucharist? How do we prepare for that? Because there's just the practical stuff of like, okay, it's who can receive communion, and take that as a teaching moment and an opportunity to share our Catholic faith with people who would not hear it otherwise, and as well don't have at this moment the opportunity to go anywhere to do that. You know, they, while in prison, they cannot go to the local parish down the street, so, you know, so close but so far away from the faith. And then at the same time, they had also signed up for this Bible study, so it's like there's also that willingness in them to learn the faith, to talk about it. So it's a very unique, again, missionary opportunity for us.
Yeah, that is, I don't know that there's any experience quite like that. If you think about it, like you mentioned, being mm-hmm. so close yet so far, mm-hmm. and yet that time of isolation that a lot of people are given in prison, like actually draws them. I mean, I would imagine would actually draw them closer, in some ways, because they have all this time. And I'm curious, for those who maybe want to become Catholic or didn't like go through all, like were baptized Catholic but haven't pursued anything else, mm-hmm. are they eligible, like, for an OCIA or RCIA program while incarcerated, or how does that, or do they have to like learn more about it and then once they're released, mm-hmm. go through the formal program? How does that work?
I know that some OCIA programs run in prisons. I mean, you think of a situation where someone's sentenced for, you know, decades or something. Well, they still have the opportunity to practice their faith. So in a lot of prisons, they do have an OCIA program. We do not at Lancaster County Prison, mostly because it's a very fast turnover. So to get a thorough formation isn't really possible for us. But certainly to get them started on that path is completely possible, and we encourage that. It's interesting. It's when it comes to that sort of thing, a lot of it is supporting the inmates in their own efforts. Mm. I've come across a number of inmates that will take that time opportunity to be like, "Oh, I was reading Thomas Aquinas and St. Ignatius Loyola and the spiritual exercises." And it's like, how did you get started on this to begin with? But they take the opportunity to take the initiative themselves. It's almost like, you know, you're saying that isolation. But it's like, well, I've been simply cut off from so many superfluous things and now have time to work on what really matters, can really be their mindset. So I've encountered a lot of inmates that are like that. You know, there a lot of inmates that are the opposite, and recidivism rates are high. But those who have eyes to see can see that they have an opportunity while incarcerated to, you know, reconnect with the Lord who never leaves them no matter where they are. So I have seen that a lot. And that's something that I think a lot of us can learn from. You know, you think of the experience of a lot of inmates, even if it's off of, you know, one bad decision of theirs, one bad decision that can take away all that they have, at least temporarily, and put them in this place that is cut off, that is isolated from their family and friends, even their stuff, creature comforts, addictions, just everything, everything like that. But you talk about, you know, one bad decision, one sin cutting you off from that. Sounds a lot like the spiritual life. You know, it only takes one sin to separate us from God. But again, the way a lot of them react is to say, okay, yeah, that was wrong what I did. You know, recognize that, ask forgiveness, that it's where I'm privileged to come in a lot of times, and be instrumental in that. Literally, just as an instrument, like just that one, you know, sort of one time use. God's the one doing most of the work, along with the inmate doing a lot of work too, and they can really turn themselves around and go to God in those situations. So it's something very powerful for us to have that spiritual example of a lot of these inmates, I think. So
yeah. I love what you said about how one bad decision for them separated them from society, whereas mm-hmm. one sin for us can also separate us from God. So we're not yeah. all that dissimilar. And yeah. if you think about it, and I think the way the movies have portrayed like life in prison mm-hmm. is it dehumanizes yeah. these actual human beings who mm-hmm. are behind bars, who sin just like the rest of us, but they got caught. Mm-hmm. If that, yeah. I don't mean yeah. to downplay it at all, but it's an opportunity, just like mm-hmm. we have an opportunity.
Yeah. 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 Again, wouldn't put words in their mouth, and a lot of prisoners will say, you know, that it is that they've been given a gift to sort of realize in their, you know, normal physical life, the effects of the sin they have committed. Like, not a lot of us get that. I mean, hopefully won't. I wouldn't wish somebody to go to prison. But they recognize, you know, like what St. Paul said, that they have been enslaved, but by their sin. That freedom is in acting virtuously, not in the things that led them to prison, but in the things that lead them out and keep them out. And again, and those are, at the end of the day, those are spiritual things that bring them freedom. The what is it, Saint Dismas, who was crucified with Christ, the good thief, is a patron saint of the incarcerated, prisoners, guards, just the whole kit and caboodle. Christ on the cross. We have two examples of how you could react when you are condemned, when you have sinned. So, you know, one on his left is, just blaming Jesus. I think we do that a lot when we encounter misfortune, even when it's because of our own mistakes, our own sin. Even then, we tend to blame God a lot for the consequences, for the situation that we're in. But what about Dismas, who instead of that, you know, he replied, "No, we are guilty of our crimes. We are justly punished." And asks Jesus for mercy. Remember me when you come into your kingdom. And Jesus answered, "Today you will be with me in paradise." Today, you know, traditionally we take Christ's promises, bringing Dismas as the first person to go to heaven, to go straight there. Maybe a little time in purgatory, but after the. The souls from the harrowing of hell, it was Dismas, the first to receive that amazing reward, because he was repentant, because he realized, hey, you know, this cross that I'm on is so, so temporary. And what really matters is my relationship with Jesus Christ. Has he forgiven me? Please, Lord, just let me be where you are. Lead me into your kingdom. And that's what needs to be important for us, and that experience of Dismas is repeated in a lot of inmates, and again is a very inspiring example of repentance, forgiveness, and God's grace and reward.
I love that. I hadn't really thought about it, that like I never really put two and two together about the Jesus was surrounded by criminals, and that this cross that we're on, and the cross that the inmates are bearing of being incarcerated is a temporary one, and we can use it to get closer to God. And I am guilty of having moments where I'm just angry at God, like, well, it's his fault, and not I made a bad decision, it's God's fault. And and I'm sure that's something that we can all learn from, whether we're in this like spiritual prison or physical prison. But talk to me a little bit about, you know, if this is a temporary cross, how can we bear it and bear the suffering patiently? Do you notice that, especially with the inmates, that, I mean, obviously there's going to be some impatience if I want to get out, especially as we get closer to, and you mentioned that there's a high turnover rate in the prison. Is Lancaster County Prison one that like a stop on the road to another prison, or is it just like you're only going to be serving a couple years and then you're out, or how does that?
Yes. So for really short sentences, they could serve it out at the county prison. And again, a lot of them are moving on to other institutions for longer sentences. But even, you know, all levels of crime, you know, while they're in court, they're at the county prison, so it's the whole gambit, a lot of patience required, and a lot of unknown, I think, is what makes it difficult to be patient. You know, they do a lot of waiting around for, okay, lawyers got to get back to me, waiting to hear on this and that. I know none of this jargon. I'm just there because I'm needed. you know, they'll talk a lot about that. But at the same time, what they're learning through that process, almost being forced to learn, is abandonment to God's will. And I think, you know, for anybody, you know, who's wondering, you know, why would God let this happen? Why do I have to wait around for His reward, His justice, His mercy? Becomes a question of, okay, will I accept this as being allowed by God for a reason, to teach me, to rely on Him, to trust in Him? You know, if He gave us the answers right away, there'd be no reason for us to love and to trust Him. God would just be a machine, and a machine of justice, mercy. You can't have a machine of love. You know, so we have an opportunity to actually have relationship with God in those moments. So I think to take those moments where we're tempted to impatience, recognize that as a temptation from the devil, who wants to separate us from God, and instead say, no, this is actually my opportunity to get closer, to love Him more, and in that way to defeat that temptation of impatience. I think is something I have and can learn a lot from the incarcerated.
Yeah. What is something that you would like our listeners to know about prison ministry? Or is there any way that they can get involved? Maybe if they can't physically go to the prison, how else can we get involved in prison ministry? Yeah.
There's a couple ways. Even if you can't go in and volunteer yourself, you may call. Again, prisons themselves will have a chaplain program, you know, non-denominational, however you want to put that. Who know? If you want to get involved in the Catholic ministry, this is who you go to. So to call the ministry chaplaincy at that prison to see where, because again, it's different everywhere. So I could tell you who does it in Lancaster, but and see what group you could volunteer with, or simply ask it, you know, are there materials that you need? Well, not magazines, they have staples in them, so you can't get a magazine, but the books, other materials. Again, really depends on the prison, which is why you don't go buy something and then donate it. This is why you call first and ask what they need. Do this at your parish too. Call first and ask what's needed, and help in that way, you know. You know, see where you're being called to serve. So you go ask somebody what you could be doing, and I'd encourage people to do that. Again, it's a lot of people don't realize it is a way to be a missionary. It's a way to hit all the corporal works of mercy if you want to get to those. A lot of people skip over, you know, visit the imprisoned. So it's a really cool and not really difficult opportunity to do that. So a lot of prison ministries do need volunteers to go in to volunteer for Bible study. And just again, how it functions, there is a lot of need for that. Like at a lot of prisons, they don't let different blocks associate with each other or go to the same events or things. So if you want a Bible study for everybody in the prison, to be available to everybody in the prison, you have to put on 12 Bible studies. You need it. So volunteers are really needed. You don't have to be a scholar. you just need to be willing to share and to talk. And it's just, you know, providing providing the inmates that space to get together to pray. So it's really important. So you can support monetarily with materials, with your own service and volunteerism, don't be afraid to do that. And you know, hey, what's a phone call? Even if you figure out, hey, I can't do this, but maybe I'll do that, or I can't do any of it. What harm is a phone call? So you can call the chaplaincy programs at whatever prison is nearest to you, because they're right at your doorstep, but they can't come to you for ministry. Mm. You know, you have to go for them. That's what makes it a missionary activity.
I love that. Well, Father Morelli, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us about this and really kind of opening our eyes to this very special ministry that we have that often gets overlooked. So thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. Great to meet you.
Nice to meet you, too. Thank you so much for listening. Our goal at the Diocese of Harrisburg is to walk with you on your faith journey. So if this episode resonated with you in any way, the easiest way to show your appreciation is by sharing this program with your network or by leaving a review on your listening platform. You can also support us financially by making a donation online at hbgdiocese.org/DAC and clicking the Make a Donation button. Thanks again, and we'll see you at church on Sunday.